This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents 131 Days, Book 1, written by Keith C. Blackmore, performed by John Lee. Chapter 1. Baylis and Gaul. Thunder. Except it wasn't really like thunder. It was more like that initial crash of diving headfirst into a deep body of water, that rush of sound and pressure that flattens a man's ears to his skull, setting his skin to tingling with shock, the sensation of being enveloped by the coldness of it all, the entering, right up until he breaks the surface of the pool, gasping for breath, and just grateful to be able to do so. It was more like that, and it roared overhead at that very moment. There were thousands out there, watching. Baylis stood in a white tunnel, long and bare, leading upward to a thick portcullis. A gatekeeper stood a few paces in front of him, checking his fingernails for dirt. A lever protruded from the wall over his left shoulder. Baylis ignored the gatekeeper and regarded the bench to his right. There, for support, he had sat on it once before, toward the end of his first tournament, because he had been tired of it all and couldn't wait to be finished, one way or another. That was 5 years ago. He had done that 5 years ago and vowed never to return, made promises to dead men that he'd never return. Yet here he was, and for what? When he hacked heads off brutes trying to do the same to him, he wished it was finished. He wished it was done, either with him winning it all or just dying in one short spraying grunt. He had vowed he would never return to the hell of the Sunjar's pit. But here he was, both ashamed and excited. Baylis had won it all 5 years ago, the title and the coin, as well as the unwanted life celebrity status and routine. In the first year, he basked in the adoration and the attention, lapped up the praise like a thirsty dog and barked for more. That was the first year. By the second year, he was already tired of the constant scrutiny whenever he walked the streets. He started avoiding crowds here and there, until he gradually shunned them entirely. He despised people wanting stories of the pit. He got angry with them, got angry at the smiles, when they told their tales of warriors, of gladiators, when really they didn't know one damn thing. They were spectators, watching men tear the guts out of each other and delighting in it for an afternoon, or morning, or whenever the bloodletting was scheduled. All of them believed they knew his strengths and weaknesses. They didn't know anything more than what they saw from the stands high above, far away from harm. One time, a crazy Siberian had flung his spear into the masses and pinned two poor unlucky bastards through their gullets. That was the talk of the gladiators that day, and more than one wished they had tossed that gut sticker. Not that the Siberian got away with it. Archers had cut him down right and proper, and then the scars dragged him out of Sunjar's pit using meat hooks. But the Siberian had gotten his point across. The crowds were both grand and evil. They praised your name in one instant and called for your head the next. They supported you utterly, then betrayed your guts at the first sign of weakness. They raised you up and were more than happy to let you drop. And yet, despite it all, here he was. Baylis was back. All because, Lord save his soul, he missed it. After he had been forgotten, perhaps around the fourth year, he discovered he longed for the attention. Almighty Seddon took his black hide. He missed having his name spoken with such honored reverence. He missed the comparisons to the champions of old. He missed the physical challenges, the competition. Lords above, he missed hell. "You're too old," the gladiatorial chamber had informed him when he approached them about returning to the games. "Be chewed up by the younger pups." But they relented. It was nothing to them, and insulting to Baylis's intelligence to think they thought they could fool him into thinking they cared. They only cared about the coin they could earn on the odds. Think of the promotions. the old champion, back and seeking glory once more on the arena sands, still as dangerous as in his prime. Bayliss didn't feel old at 37, 7 years after prime. Topside roared again, shaking him from his thoughts. Bayliss exhaled. He'd wanted back in the pit. He wanted this more than anything. Seddon save him. And here he was. He felt the reassuring weight of his armor plates. They covered his front and back completely, hanging in place by thick bands of leather going over his shoulders. A thick leather sleeve protected his sword arm. His other arm had the shield. Strips of crenellated leather draped his legs, but if he took a good hit there, he could be crippled in an instant, or even lose the limb. His helm was wingless and caged. Bayliss preferred as little ornamentation as possible. Some of the others loved it, strutted across the sand in their decorations. Not him. He was all business. He tightened his grip on the sword hilt, the blade still in its scabbard, waiting to taste air and lick flesh. It was good steel. Someone said Madimian forged, but Bayliss didn't believe it. There were no Madimian characters stamped onto the base. Beyond the portcullis, a voice, loud and harsh, introduced the first fight.
You ready?
The gatekeeper asked. The older, grizzled man studied him with one cocked eye.
Aye, that, Bayliss answered.
Seddon bless you, then. He raised his arm to the lever.
Seddon, Bayliss breathed from behind his face cage, can lick my ass.
That drew a frown from the gatekeeper as he pulled the lever. The portcullis shivered and parted. Sunlight yawned through unobstructed. Bayliss jogged up the wide steps, swinging his shield to and fro. His brow crinkled in concentration. This was it. A rogue wave of sound engulfed him as he entered the arena, crashing down and almost stunning him senseless.
Lords,
how he missed the applause, knowing it was fleeting. From the stands, the crowds greeted the old champion, screaming his name and pumping fists. Women flaunted their bare breasts. The men howled. A few curses perforated the cacophony, and Bayliss scowled.
Savages all.
Yet he loved it.
We knew he could not be away for long, and we were right.
At the far end of the sands, the orator appeared as a grey post with his skeletal arms outstretched. To his left was the gladiatorial chamber stand, separated and sheltered from the crowds by high walls. The owners and trainers of respected stables would be there, watching their dogs go at it. To Bayliss's right, and so much grander, was the raised platform for the king and guests. King Jun lounged up there, watching, perhaps, while servants fed him some rare tropical fruit. The man appeared a distant figure of white. At the base of the platform was a low wall of pole-arm-wielding axemen, the legendary guardians of the throne.
He is an eater of flesh, the orator bawled, an abomination, and he has chosen to return to teach the hell pups of this year's tournament the meaning of the word war. Years have no effect on this man, and he knows no fear, no mercy, as his opponents have discovered time and time again. In his day he took the heads of 100 men, and he means to take 100 more. He is a survivor and a champion of the pit from years past. He is Bayliss, the Butcher of Balgotha.
The crowd roared. They remembered him. Bayliss took a deep, satisfying breath, but he never took the heads of 100 men in the past. He'd have to have a talk with the orator for spewing such gurry.
His opponent from the lands of Kree, Gol.
Across the arena, from the shadows of an open portcullis, stepped a man holding a sword and shield. His sword was already out and at guard. Bayliss grimaced, like he was about to charge across some 50 paces to have at him right at the introductions. In that instant, he knew it was the lad's first fight. Bayliss sighed. Lords help him. He hoped his opponent was a criminal.
"Free, trained, and bred," the orator announced.
Bayliss gave the barest shake of his head. Free trained. That meant, for whatever reason, the lad had entered hell of his own free will. The ranks of the free trained were the most numerous of the games, but they were also the most unskilled, the most barbaric. Unlike the hell pups trained by established houses. The old champion inhaled hot air, and wondered why the warrior entered the games. Then he caught himself and cursed his hypocrisy.
"This is the first fight of many, good people of Sunja, on behalf of the gladiatorial chamber and King Jun's best wishes for you to be entertained. Let the games begin."
Another tsunami of sound hurt Bayliss's ears. Next time he would pretend his ears were two harlots on their monthly time, and jam cotton in them. At the signal, Gaul walked toward the Butcher of Balgathar, the champion of games gone by, amidst the screaming spectators. Bayliss watched him for a moment before finally drawing his sword. The crowd approved. Gaul wore leather. Braces protected his arms, and greaves shielded his legs. His sword was shiny and oiled. A plain helm, caged and scratched, covered his head. The boy had trained by the looks of him. He knew how to hold his blade. Bayliss could tell by his foe's stance.
"Even better,"
Bayliss groaned inwardly. The look on the man's face, however, was one of sheer fright. Nerves. First fight of his life in front of so many, probably. And to be thrown to the butcher in his opening match. Bayliss frowned. Seddon above could be a bastard.
"Greetings, la—"
Bayliss began. Gaul attacked with a straight-armed thrust, aimed for the gut. Bayliss turned it away with a swipe of his blade. The younger man thrust again, and once more, Bayliss knocked it aside. The once champion then sidestepped toward the other's shield arm. Good stabs, but they had come too early in the game. Gaul, however, was of a different mind. He jabbed a third time, bouncing his sword off Bayliss's shield. The young gladiator circled to his right and slashed, missing a cheek. He lunged for an exposed knee and stabbed only air. He stepped in and thrust for the same knee a second time. Bayliss parried again, then retreated a pace. The boy was fast. Gaul jerked his arm back. If of a mind, Bayliss could have taken the limb off at the elbow, shearing through like a knob of butter. But that would have finished the match too early, and the crowds didn't like quick fights.
"Slow down, lad,"
Bayliss urged, watching the man over the rim of his shield.
"Slow down, you'll be spent in seconds at this pace."
Gaul didn't listen. Instead, he jumped to the attack, cutting for the champion's head. Bayliss spiraled his shield, deflecting the blow and allowing his foe's own momentum to carry him past. The once champion made him look clumsy in that one lunge, and for a brief second, Gaul's back was exposed. Bayliss did nothing. Gaul recovered and took a breath. Sweat covered his face. He lunged, steel flashing in the sun. A shield turned the blade away. He got in close and whipped his shield's rim at the old champion's head. Blocked. Gaul stabbed for the gut. It bounced off Bayliss's armored plate. A series of strikes erupted from the young warrior then, a flurry of well-practiced cuts and thrusts, meant to gut or decapitate a foe. The strength and speed of the offensive impressed Bayliss and backed him up toward a high wall. Each heavy-handed connection brought a grimace to the once champion's face. The lad was strong. Then the storm broke, and Gaul, his strength momentarily depleted, retreated to a chorus of disapproval. Peeking over his shield, Bayliss studied the younger man. The lad was a fighter, and he meant to have Bayliss's head. He supposed a champion's scalp would be a notable trophy.
"All right then, boy," Bayliss mused. "All right."
Amidst a swelling of applause, the champion shook his sword arm, loosening it. Then he did the same for his shield arm. The crowd reacted with screams. Word spread through the stands like an unchecked fire.
Those who had seen the old champion fight years ago knew what was coming. With meat on the table, the butcher was readying his tools. Gaul sensed it as well. Fear glittered in his eyes. He readied his shield and bobbed it up and down, left and right, trying to be everywhere at once. Baylis's sword arm snapped out. Gaul's shield dropped to deflect the thrust. He realized the feint too late as the butcher closed and smashed his shield's edge into the face cage of the young warrior. Gaul staggered to the left. The crowd approved. "A love tap, to go with those scratches," Baylis said. But he didn't press his attack. The young Cree collected himself and became more cautious. Baylis could see it in his stance. The boy was tired, spent, waiting for his strength to return and wishing it would return quickly. The butcher went to work. Baylis fainted again, and then drove his blade toward the right shin of his foe. The edge licked leather and split it instantly. Gaul jerked back, and Baylis whipped his sword up, drawing a fine line inside the man's guard, up the right side of his ribs. With a yelp, Baylis probably heard better than the crowd. Gaul jumped back. The younger man checked himself quickly. Another mistake. The old champion charged. Where Gaul's initial onslaught had been full of strength and adrenaline, the butcher's was controlled, tight, and, as a practitioner of the medicinal arts might comment, surgical. Baylis fainted, stabbed, and slashed in combination, one attack flowing into the other. Gaul got behind his shield, but Baylis nicked and skinned him of his leather. The young man retreated, but the champion pressed forward and slashed for his foe's eyes, a ruse, as his foot stomped and crushed three of Gaul's toes. The connection made the hell pup sing. Struggling to stand upright, Gaul hid behind his shield. Baylis circled to the man's left, his shield arm. It was an old tactic of the butcher's, to draw out the match, immobilize his opponent, then slowly bleed him until the kill. The crowd paid good coin to see a fight, not a quick stabbing. If it was an execution they wanted, they could gather at the public square. Baylis continued to circle, and a limping Gaul struggled to keep up, turning in place to remain facing his adversary. The butcher's blade flashed. His steel rebounded off Gaul's shield twice, knocking it out of position. A third thrust bit flesh, and Gaul's shield arm drooped from the impact. Behind his face cage, the young man grimaced and made the mistake of checking his shoulder that had just been cut to the bone. Baylis's sword bit his adversary's right forearm, gnashing through leather and tasting meat. Blood fell from Gaul's staggering frame. He backed up a step, and almost lost his balance. Baylis stabbed his right shoulder before cracking his shield's rim across the man's jaw. The connection straightened Gaul's neck, and he crashed to the sand. The spectators cried out for death, then, demanded it. Both Baylis and the orator glanced in the direction of King Jun, and saw the ruler watching with some interest. A servant held grapes mere inches from his lips.
"Kill him!"
The audience took up the chant. Not about to be hurried by the crowd, Baylis looked down on the sprawled form. Gaul shook his head, trying to clear his vision of black motes, no doubt. His back was to the once champion, bent, beaten, and exposed. His shield was nowhere within reach, yet he managed to cling to his sword. Baylis could have killed the man right then, stuck his blade straight through the lower spine of the gladiator and pinned him, twitching, to the sand. But he didn't.
"Get up,"
he ordered.
"Get up!"
Somewhere in his daze, Gaul lifted his head, the face cage turning in the direction of his opponent. Confusion creased his features.
"Come on,"
Baylis urged, wondering if he could be heard over the crowd.
"No one needs to perish here this day, boy. You started well enough. Now let's finish it."
Gaul got to his knees. His face cage had been smashed in on one side, the lower part of the metal coated in dust and blood. Blood ran freely from his wounds. His left arm hung uselessly, leather and skin shredded alike. His toes were mashed. Gaul was a mess, but he brought up his sword.
An impressed Baylis considered the man for a moment, ignoring the swelling impatience of the crowd. The youth had made mistakes, guilty only of inexperience, and Baylis sighed in remembrance of his own first match. It was a shame Goal had to draw the butcher on his first day back. Baylis stepped forward and fainted, as he had done often throughout the fight, and Goal plunged his blade through the champion's knee. That sudden shock of steel slicing flesh and bone, forgotten for so long, gushed into the champion's mind and paralyzed him as if caught in a crushing vice. Long enough for Goal to cut his other leg. Baylis crashed to the ground. Momentarily forgetting how to fall, his head bounced hard off the sand. He clamped down on his tongue, snipping off the very tip. Blood spurted. The impact brought stars to his vision. He tried to bring up his sword, but Goal was on top of him. Worse, Goal had his knee in the valley of his elbow. Baylis felt a foot on his opposite forearm. He couldn't summon his strength. The man had him spread like a wounded bird. The tip of a sword pricked his throat. Baylis's vision cleared. He gazed into the hard eyes of his younger foe. He realized then he had underestimated the man's will, and had played too long with his foe when he should have been killing. His eyes flicked skyward, and he saw a deep, empty blue. Baylis grimaced. To think he had returned to this. "No one needs," he began. Goal stabbed with whatever strength remained in his good arm, clamping Baylis's jaw shut, punching through the butcher's skull, and partially lifting the helm off the man's head. The young gladiator did not release the blade. Instead, he stared into the eyes of the corpse. Eyes once full of bemused comprehension, now glazed over like white wax. The man from Cree held on to the blade, even as the crescendo of cheers smashed into his senses, even when the orator announced him as the winner and slayer of the Butcher of Balgothar. King Jun himself tipped a goblet to the gladiator's surprising victory. Goal released his sword. Somehow, he managed to stand. He staggered and cradled his left arm, which was in bloody ribbons. The cheering of thousands racked his senses, rocking him. He'd done it. He'd faced the Butcher of Balgothar, and put a length of steel through his brain. With a curse, he raked off his helm, considered it, and flung it into the air. His name was Goal. It was his first match. He wanted to make a name for himself, to become a legend, much like the dead man at his feet. He flung his good arm wide, embracing the crowd, as tears, sweat, and scarlet fell from him. He smiled. The orator looked down on the victorious pit fighter and nodded. The Butcher of Balgothar had played with the young lion and lost his life. Such was fate in Sunja's pit. He glanced in the direction of the king and saw the man drinking from a goblet, the rush of the surprise victory already waning. But then only the truly spectacular held the king's attention for long. The orator took a breath as he beheld the pulsating arena. It was the first day, and a good opening for the games. Chapter 2. Vadrian and Bars. They dragged the corpse of Baylis from the arena by the ankles. When the arena attendants got the body inside the tunnel, they dumped the dead champion into a cart. Three men wheeled the corpse through the general quarters beneath the pit, passing through dusty cones of light from torches or oil lamps. The procession went through rows of gladiators, standing, sitting, performing warm-up rituals, or mentally readying themselves, waiting for their turn upon the arena sands. Baylis's carcass caused a lull to sweep over the works of them. Hundreds of men stopped what they were doing and watched the cart pass. Some were close enough to peer inside with looks of solemn consideration.
"Damnation," spoke Bars from where he sat on a bench. "That's enough to wake a topper up, if he wasn't before."
"What did you expect?"
asked a gladiator named Harm, his bright blue eyes leaving the cart's progression and taking in the man sitting next to him.
I mean... Bars paused. That was Bayless the Butcher. I watched him fight years ago, when I was just a boy. When I saw him earlier this day, I hoped...
Hoped what?
That I wouldn't be matched with him.
Harm studied the younger man for a moment, then hissed out his breath from between perhaps the worst set of teeth Bars had ever seen. Though Harm still retained a full set, his teeth were chipped and overlapped, corrupted into a brazen collection of yellow and black fangs. Harm was bulky as well as scarred. Where most pit fighters were corded with muscle, both heavy and sinewy, Harm clearly ate heavily of barley and beans to gain fat over his muscular frame.
Ha!
The fat man finally said, scratching at his bare, hairy belly. He was asking for it. A right and proper punts, if you ask me. He had it all, and wanted back in, and he nearing 40 at that. Dog balls! The shagger wanted to die, my thoughts on it.
Bars wasn't so certain. Death was a possibility in the pit, and he had prepared himself for the bloodletting. He believed he could kill a man if he had to, especially when he considered the potential riches he could win at the tournament's end.
Look,
Harm said, breaking Bars from his spiraling thoughts. That one was a fool. Make no mistake. No one returns to this hell when they've won it all.
You returned, a muscular man declared, plopping down on a bench across from the pair.
I didn't win it all,
Harm countered.
But you came back anyway,
the newcomer said, and grinned, with enough scars that if you were on your back with your gut in the air, people would mistake you for one chick of a very fat ass, lashed 40 times with a whip.
Harm chuckled. At least my mother didn't give me a name like yours.
He held out a closed fist, which the other man met with his own.
This is Pignot, youngster, he said, introducing the warrior. You'll encounter no fouler bastard in these games, past or present.
Pignot nodded.
You know what, youngster? You're sitting and conversing with perhaps the only two toppers in here that survived all of this fun and dared try it once more, year after year.
Aye, that, Harm agreed, with another scratch at his belly.
Aye, that indeed, Pignot said, his dark eyes twinkling. Can't get enough.
Unlike Harm, Pignot was heavy with visible muscle, great forearms, and a head covered in black hair. He kept his mane in a tight knot at the back of his skull.
Don't listen to him, Harm said. He let slip a cow kiss before going out onto the sands.
Pignot's smile faltered.
You didn't have to mention that.
Bars regarded the muscular newcomer with a curious expression.
Ha! He let loose,
Harm elbowed the younger gladiator, and nodded at his pit brother from tournaments past.
He was young, like you. Nervous, too,
unlike you. Got up to the portcullis, and when it opened, his bowels let go. He let slip a cow kiss right there on the threshold.
Unfit, it was.
Remembering, Pignot's smile returned.
The gatekeeper didn't care too much for me that day.
Or any other after that. You stank the place to Seddon's high heaven.
Lad,
Pignot started, leaning forward, you are sitting next to the one man in this whole madness that when he finally dies, the scars themselves will take his scarred hide, tan it, and make leather enough to outfit a 5,000-man claw.
That's why I don't mind the scars,
Harm added, or the holes.
Aye, that, Pignot continued. If they make sails from him, the holes won't catch a wind.
A weak smile spread across Barr's features.
Oh, well, Harm said. All's good, then. It's good to see you, Pignot of Sunja.
And you, Harm of Jiberia.
May we never meet in the pit. May we never.
Pignot looked upon the other with fondness.
Are you, youngster?
Barr's hoped the same, and when Pignot extended his fist, he met it with his own, pressing his knuckles hard.
The youngster's got push,
Pignot observed with approval. I think he'll do well.
Aye, that,
Harm agreed. Let's see your sword. After a moment's hesitation, Bars adjusted his scabbard at his hip and took out the blade. Observing manners, he laid it across his forearm, pommel first, before offering it. Harm took it with a nod.
Good weight,
the Jiberian noted.
And Medemian.
Medemian?
Pignot's eyes went wide.
Let's see it, then.
He took the sword and marveled at the characters stamped into its surface.
It is. It is Medemian. Where did you get this? Steel like this is hard to find these days.
Bars shrugged.
I bought it. Nothing but the best, eh?
Pignot asked, but Bars didn't answer. Glancing at Harm, Pignot gave the sword back to the younger man and sized him up.
You've got decent leather on you too, I see. Sunjan made.
Excellent. You don't want that Jiberian shat protecting you?
Jiberia makes the best armor in the world,
the fat man declared,
which is why you aren't wearing any. Too heavy for me, slows me down.
Pignot snorted.
Slows him down? You'd think he was lightning pissed out of Sedan himself.
Let me see your shield there. Bars handed him the round, iron-rimmed barrier. The veteran gladiator fixed it to his left arm and swung it about. He stood and swung it again, gaining glares from a few men nearby. After a moment, he returned it with an approving nod.
That's good weight you have there. Well-made Sunjan craftsmanship. You'll do well.
Got a helm? Bar showed a wingless helmet, complete with face cage.
He's ready for war, I'd say,
Harm commented.
I'd say so too,
Pignot agreed.
All the right tools for the bloodletting.
Who trained you?
School of Nexus,
Bars answered with some confidence. The revelation surprised the other two men.
Nexus!
Exclaimed Harm.
I know I haven't known you for long, but
Nexus? And here I was feeling bad for you. Trying to brighten your spirits.
Ah, that, Pignot said. A man with your expensive tools and training. Well, I certainly hope we don't cross steel out there.
Nor I.
Harm shook his head. It was true enough that the School of Nexus had a reputation, and Bars had done well in his training. Well enough that his instructors had deemed him worthy for the games, and given their blessing. Win it all for the school, his trainers and taskmasters had told him.
Nor I,
Bars eventually said, and meant it. It wasn't uncommon for friends to meet in the arena. In fact, he heard that most gladiators avoided each other's company during the tournament for that very reason. The chance that, one day, friends just might have to meet and bleed each other was enough to keep one from getting to know a fellow fighter. The rules of the pit were simple, and a defeated pit fighter lived or died by the inclination of his opponent. A match did not have to end with a death, nor did King Jun demand it, although it was said he enjoyed not knowing what the victor would do to his beaten adversary. The spectators, however, were different. They usually demanded a killing, and the winning gladiator decided whether or not to give them one. Truth be known, Bars found himself enjoying the company of both Fat Harm and Hairy Pignot. They relaxed him, as odd as it might have seemed. The School of Nexus didn't want their gladiators to interact with any other school, but especially the free-trained, who held allegiance to no one and were perceived as beneath their level.
Why in Seaman's hell are you out here conversing with the horse-shite?
Pignot asked, as if reading his mind.
You lose your way. These are general quarters, you know.
Of course the lad knows,
Harm defended.
But why wouldn't he come out and walk amongst the free-trained? This pup is wiser than his years are letting on.
Pignot considered the youngster in a different light.
It's true,
Bars nodded.
Nexus doesn't like us wandering in the pit, but I knew I was fighting next, so I stole away in hopes of getting a glimpse of my opponent. Nexus will have my hide, though, if he finds me astray.
Generous master, eh?
Pignot commented.
Oh, he's a self-righteous dog blossom, no doubt,
Bars smirked, getting a chuckle from both men. On cue, a man dressed in stately robes, the Media, appeared in an open archway at the end of the general quarters. A half-dozen heavily armed Scar warriors flanked the arena official as he marched up a ramp to a large desk, a bastion of authority positioned between two torchlit tunnels. A huge matchboard hung on the wall behind the desk, displaying the day's scheduled fights. More torches lit up the surface, illuminating slots for the names of 10 pairings for the day. With a flourish, the Maedir produced a scroll. He consulted it, then checked the matchboard and called out two names, knowing full well several fighters present were unable to read. Bar's head came up. "That you?" Harm asked. Before the younger man could answer, his opponent, Vadrian, jumped to his feet and roared. He was tall, blonde, and yelled long and loud enough to turn the heads of several gladiators. Leather armor covered him, with greaves and pads in the necessary places. Bars couldn't get a good look at his face, and as he watched, his opponent-to-be bent and picked up a winged helm fashioned from bronze. It gleamed in the nearby torchlight as if taken from a dream. "For fatherly Sedan above," Vadrian exclaimed, "oh, father, all shall tremble and fear the name of Vadrian, son of Sedan." The pitfighter fitted the helm to his head and, brandishing his sword, stalked off toward the Maedir. He continued swearing oaths of a faith not often practiced within the ranks. "A screamer," Pignot observed. "I hate screamers." Halm made a face. "What was your name again, lad?"
"Bars."
"Bars, do us all a favour and shut that one up."
"Right and proper," Pignot added.
"Right and proper," Halm agreed. "Never did like the type. All noise they are."
"And it's noisy enough around here as it is," Pignot said. "Why that?"
With a little smile, Bars got to his feet. He placed his own helm atop his head and hefted his sword and shield. He felt it, then. The build-up of nervous energy in his lower legs and arms. His heart beat quickened, and he took a breath, remembering to control it as his trainers had drilled into him. He looked to the two gladiators sharing his company.
"My thanks for talking."
"Plenty of time for more talking," Harm's bright blue eyes narrowed. "When you get back."
"If you get back."
Pignot winked. "What did I say earlier?" Harm indicated the hairy beast across from him. "A foul bastard." Bars composed himself and nodded once more to the two men. He made his way to the arena official and his bodyguard of Scars. Eyes watched the young gladiator as he moved through general quarters, and Bars was aware of every set.
"Bars?" the Maedir asked.
He nodded.
"What are you doing in here?"
the official asked.
"I got lost."
The Maedir frowned.
"Follow the tunnel on the left, then," he pointed. "Don't lag. When the portcullis opens, there'll be a short introduction. Wait until it's done. Then you are free to beat, maim, or kill. Understood?"
"I understand."
"Then get on,"
the Maedir instructed. Bars left in a jog, heading down the indicated passageway. More armed Scars lined the tunnel, spaced apart at regular intervals. None of the visors followed Bars as he passed. That was fine with him. Too much attention made him uneasy. Around a corner and at the passageway's end, four more Scars stood guard. A gatekeeper waited with his back to the wall, a lever just over his shoulder. A bench was opposite him. Bars considered the seat but chose not to use it. He had too much energy.
"You're the one in place?"
the gatekeeper asked of a nearby Scar. He didn't hear a reply. The crowd roared from above. He looked up the stairs leading to the surface and saw the mighty portcullis marking the arena entrance. The pit. This was finally it. 2 years of hard training all led to this. If he won, the coin would be enough to afford him a villa somewhere away from the city, and the bride of his choice. He tried hard not to think of her. He tried very hard not to think of her worried face. He needed all his wits focused on the task ahead.
"You're ready?"
the gatekeeper asked. He was older, grizzled, and studied him with a cocked eye.
"I am. Maybe Sedan will bless you then."
He raised his hand to the lever in the wall. The portcullis groaned as it lifted open.
The cheering intensified, almost impossibly so. The gatekeeper might have said something more, but his words were drowned out. Taking a breath, Bars jogged upward into the light. He entered the arena, the noise pounding his senses like beach rocks in a storm swell. Women called out to him. Men shook their fists and cursed. The smell of sweat and heat and something else made the air bad to taste. Bars saw guards rinsing the rim of the arena's lower walls. They stood above the special boxes on the lowest level, where the dignitaries, the wealthy, and owners of gladiators could view without obstruction. He saw the high box where the king would watch if he wasn't ratting, as the rumors went. Then he centered on the opposite side of the arena. The screamer was there, his bronze helm shining as if on fire. The man threw his arms wide and greeted the audience, turning around once. Then, sensing his opponent, the screamer turned to Bars and raised sword and fist. The fist caught his attention. It was a spiked gauntlet of sorts, with a small buckler fixed to his forearm. Bars figured his foe thought himself to be fast. How fast remained to be seen. From where he stood, in a high arena-side pulpit, the orator called for silence. "From the renowned gladiatorial school of Nexus, I give you Bars the Sunjan," he introduced with a raised arm. The crowd approved. "And from the Church of Sedin, Sedin's son himself, Vadrian the Fire!" On cue, Vadrian sunk to one knee and bowed his head. "He's praying," Bars thought. "He's actually praying." The action quieted the crowd, making it easy to hear Vadrian's words. "Sweet Sedin above, give me strength to vanquish my heathen foe this day. Give me strength to deliver him unto you, O Heavenly Father, the one true Lord. Give me strength to fight to my fullest power, in your divine name, in your divine light, to do your divine will. Help me now to smite the heathen across from me." Then it was over. Bars blinked, not sure what to make of such a prayer. Vadrian rose and spread his arms wide once more, as if receiving holy messages from above. Then, the communal complete, he dropped his arms and regarded Bars across the way. He pointed his sword at him. "I shall deliver you." "You can fishhook yourself," Bars thought with distaste, beginning to dislike screamers as well. There was a smugness, a piousness, present in his foe that he didn't care for. Then the orator bellowed, "Good people of Sunja, on behalf of the gladiatorial chamber and King Jun's best wishes for you to be entertained, let the fight begin!" Bars assumed a guarded stance and moved toward his foe. Vadrian raised his arms, holding his blade two-handed and at high guard above his head. Bars could clearly see the spikes on the holy warrior's offhand. He'd have to be wary of those. The screamer came closer. He was large and well-muscled. Bars could see the man's helm had a visor instead of a cage. The screamer's eyes scrunched as if the rest of his face smiled. Bars didn't know what was so damn amusing. He decided to do something about it. He sidestepped and lunged, stabbing for a leg while raising his shield. Vadrian's leg jerked away, and Bars found himself twisting to deflect the heavy sword coming down from above. Then his senses exploded as the spiked gauntlet smashed into the back of his head. He dove forward, the force of the blow driving him on, and spun about. With surprising speed, the bronze-helmed man was on top of him. Bars whirled to face him. He got his shield up and stabbed underneath it, but a sword parried his blade into the sand. A spiked gauntlet cracked across his jaw, the impact ripping the face cage from his helm. Bars staggered backward. Sedin's self-proclaimed holy son would not allow him to regain his senses. Vadrian brought his sword down again and again, raining heavy strikes onto Bars's upraised shield. Each connection numbed Bars's arm. Vadrian stepped in close, grabbed the edge of his rival's shield, and smashed his sword's pummel into Bars's exposed face. The graduate of the School of Nexus, felt his teeth shatter from far away, and his world left him. Something thundered against the side of his head, and Bars distantly realized that he was on his back. But that couldn't be right. The fight had only just begun. Then the sun darkened. Vadrian towered over him and stabbed him once, twice, and then a third time through his guts. The steel punched through leather and viscera like a long spike through tough cheese. After the third stab, Vadrian held his blood-stained blade to the heavens.
"I send thee the first, O Lord of Lords, the first of many, I swear unto you!"
The crowd roared. Some booed and cursed the Divine One. From his back, Bars's empty hands found his wounds. The pain in his midsection sparkled and sizzled enough for water to fill his eyes.
It wasn't supposed to end like this,
the thought formed in his head. He wanted to be away from here, back in the general quarters. He wanted to listen to Harm and Pignot. For certain they had more tales to tell. He wanted to see her face again. He heard a voice.
"Still here, little heathen?"
Bars regarded the form standing over him, black in the sun.
"Fear not,"
came the words.
"I shall send you."
Vadrian put his full strength behind his spiked gauntlet and smashed the face at his feet. The cart rolled past the masses of gladiators, drawing the usual morbid curiosity. Some were close enough to peer inside, but they did not linger on this one. Not like Balus, the butcher from Balgathar. This one, while a mess, was only a dead hellpup. Three men moved the cart toward a loading area where the bodies were piled until the day was done. The corpses would receive final rites and be burned as one. It was a foul job, but the men had done it for so long, the horror no longer bothered them. And it paid quite well. A gladiator stepped in front of the cart, stopping them. It was one of the bigger men, his huge belly bare and quivering. Harm gazed down upon the youngster he had talked to only a short time earlier, and sighed. He'd hoped Bars would return to the quarters. He remembered the unease in the pup's face, and how he had politely held out his sword and shield. Not many would do such a thing, thinking it bad luck. The thought stuck in Harm's mind. Perhaps it was bad luck after all.
"Well, damnation,"
Pignot swore, as he came up to stand alongside the cart.
"I had a good feeling about that one."
"As did I," Harm said.
"Shame. He seemed pleasant enough.
Even let me have his sword. Not many would do that."
"Not many."
From the other side of the room, Vadrian entered, bellowing praises to his lord Seddon. He held the youngster's Medimian blade over his head as a trophy, swinging it without heed. Harm loathed the screamer even more.
"Not many," he repeated to a pensive Pignot.
The Jiberian didn't dwell on the dead man. He had things to do, preparations to complete before his own fight that day. And the day was far from done.
"The hallowed father above granted me strength of arm,"
Vadrian bellowed from across the way, further grating Harm's nerves.
"With his grace and blessing, he granted me the will to vanquish a heathen maggot, and, as Seddon is my witness, I shall triumph again in the bloody pit."
Harm gazed down at the dead man in the cart, very much aware of how the voice was growing louder.
"See here!"
The Jiberian looked up. The screamer stood beside the corpse cart and pointed to it in grand fashion.
"This one goes to Saemon's hell for daring to stand against a herald of Seddon, as shall all, and perhaps in the afterlife."
Harm's eyes became slits.
"Silence yourself, you unfit cog."
The rebuke quieted Vadrian, but only for a moment.
"I'll not stop spreading the word of Seddon, the heathen,"
the blonde brute yelled, and stepped closer.
"If my words disturb you, perhaps you should take yourself from the hall." Seddon can lick my ass,"
returned Harm, not backing down in the least.
"I've been hearing you, pig bastard, all morning. Who are you spouting your shite to? Who is listening? Not this heathen shagger.
Take your long tongue and lick Seddon's crack. The insult mortified the larger warrior.
Seddon will strike you down for uttering.
I've uttered it and I'm still here. Harm threw his arms wide, inviting disaster.
Dying Seddon, take me now, if I've offended you. I'm right here, lord.
But by your holy ball sack, he pointed at Vadrian, I've had enough of this shite in my ears. Vadrian's face darkened.
You blasphemous heathen, you ignorant man-child, I'll smite you in Seddon's name.
Away with you, you unfit temple slave. Seddon's smarter than to give any attention to the likes of you. The Jiberian stepped closer to Vadrian as well, and the pair squared off like two violent storm fronts about to meet.
By the Holy Church, I'll rip out your tongue.
And with that, Vadrian raised his weapons. A wall of pit fighters swarmed between the pair, grabbing and holding on to weapon arms. Pignot placed himself before Harm, while fixing Vadrian with a hostile look. Shouts of restraint cut the air. Some gladiators glanced toward the Media and his cohort of Scar warriors, but the arena official did nothing but watch from where he sat.
Simon's ass, you smell like a pot of shite,
Harm barked over Pignot's shoulder. Do all of you Seddon lovers smell as such?
Insolent mouth, I'll yank!
The blonde struggled against the mass, holding him back.
Get that topper back,
Pignot yelled at the knot of men restraining Vadrian. Clear the space.
Hey, bitch!
Vadrian spat.
Enough!
All eyes turned to see a red-faced Media standing tall behind his desk, and glaring at the two men. The usual handful of Scars guarding the arena official had mysteriously increased to a dozen soldiers ready to break heads. The two feuding gladiators saw the impassive Reavers and quickly settled down. The men between them relaxed at the sudden drop in tension, but they did not release the pair. The Media's eyes flashed from Vadrian to Harm.
Never in my time have I witnessed that which has transpired here this day, on this, the first day of the games. Are you both so eager to dishonour these hallowed quarters? Over so minor a quibble?
Enough,
I say. You've shamed yourselves in my eyes, and the Sword Brothers about you, standing upon the very ground where countless others have stood and trained and waited to enter Sunjar's pit, to shed blood in a place that screams for it, but not here.
That quieted the lot of them. Vadrian scowled and hung his head almost theatrically. Harm burned with chagrin, and he gestured with his chin.
He started, you bastard,
shouted the other, and jerked an arm free to strike.
Enough!
The harsh command sapped the fight from both captive men, and their postures relaxed.
If you are so determined to have at each other, then I shall arrange it.
The Media's dark eyes smouldered.
I'll make it so. Is that what you want, Vadrian of Sunja?
By Seddon's holiness, yes, the chance to smite. Is that what you want, Harm of Jiberia?
The arena official snapped, cutting off the Sunjan. But at the mention of Jiberia, Vadrian's face became unpleasantly sly.
Oh, I want.
Harm seethed with a poisoned glare at the other.
I want very much.
Then it's agreed,
the Media declared. At a time of my choosing, you two shall meet in Sunja's pit.
If you fight each other before your meeting, both of you shall be executed. It is done.
The Media slapped his table, causing some to flinch.
I declare blood match.
Blood match,
Vadrian smiled, pleased with the decision.
Blood match.
Harl muttered and scowled back. Chapter 3 The Masters. They sat at the north end of Sunja's pit, in viewing boxes afforded only to the top three schools of gladiatorial arts. King Jun recognized that they were important men and, in some cases, survivors of the pit themselves. That did not make them of noble blood, however, no matter what they might have thought otherwise. Still, they were of minor importance, and thus allowed some standard of luxury. The king also decided that they would have their viewing box next to the nobles, with servants to wait upon them.
From this lofty perch, the owners watched the opening matches of the games. They had just witnessed another slaughter in the arena, a vicious killing where the victor wasted no time in slaying his fallen opponent in convincing fashion. Of the three owners, only one visibly stiffened at the conclusion of the match, for it was his own highly touted gladiator who perished.
"What in Seddon's blue piss-pot has happened?"
Nexus cried, not caring in the least what the others thought. Fine silver hair, cut to a fashionable length, fell over a face aged and sallowed by the years. A sunken chin and black eyes gave him the look of a weasel. Of the three, he was the only one who wasn't a gladiator in his youth, preferring to sharpen other skills in a much different arena. Besides owning his school, he was also a prominent wine producer for the country. He usually left the management of his gladiator school in the hands of his taskmaster and trainers, and, though he was intelligent enough to leave them to do their job, this particular year he decided to watch the games in the flesh for the first time. Nexus wouldn't hesitate to tell his trainers what he thought of their work if it didn't produce results in the arena. Of all the business ventures Nexus forayed into, the training of warriors for the pit had become the most exciting, and the most taxing, of his limited patience.
"Seddon's rosy ass!"
Nexus's normally pallid face became red with outrage.
"Who was that ass-licker? Sweet Seddon above! Sweet Seddon! I'll personally ensure that bastard is buried in a cow kiss! May same unpack Seddon's rosy ass! He got his bells paddled by a free-trained! A free-trained! That stupid he-bitch! Dying Seddon! I'll have some maggots hanging bells for this. It takes money to raise and train those toppers."
Spittle flew from Nexus's lips, and he paused to sip from a silver goblet. He got a mouthful of his own vintage down before the anger surged again. He resumed cursing, black eyes livid, as wine fell onto the front of his silk shirt. Gastillo, owner of the school of Gastillo, looked to the sands with a dour expression. Some people called him Half-Face behind his back, and to his front if drunk enough, but they would be the last words spoken if done so. The once champion was the victim of an overhand mace that missed crushing his skull, but raked the skin from the right side of his features, almost perfectly down the middle. Half of his nose had been shorn away, leaving only a frightful black hole on one side. Below that, his lips were mangled, and Gastillo forever drooled when he spoke or ate. He wore a mask during the games and in public, one of gold, that also covered the top of his head as a cap. A thin slit between his metal lips allowed him to drink, but at times he lifted the mask when he really wanted to guzzle. Unlike Nexus, Gastillo had invested substantial coin and effort in his own school, the House of Gastillo, building it up from the very beginning. Though he would mock Nexus in private, to his face he was much more respectful. The wine merchant possessed experience in matters of business that interested Gastillo greatly. At the moment, however, Gastillo felt only a twinge of regret and annoyance. It was never pleasant to see a new fighter die on the sands, especially to a fanatic like Vadrian of the Church of Seddon.
"Church of Seddon, indeed,"
Gastillo scoffed, as if the actual church participated in such bloody events. What was worse, however, was that Vadrian had killed one of Nexus's lads, and Gastillo would have to endure a livid merchant. There would be no talk of business this day. Sitting to the right and ignoring them both, a sickle of a smile spread across Dark Kurge's swarthy features. He was bald-headed and big, retaining most of his musculature for a man in his 60s. He had also been a champion of the pit, and had given his hand and half his forearm to the arena gods as the price for his success. Dark Kurge wasn't a merchant like the pair to his right. Well, he conceded he wasn't a merchant like Nexus. Gastillo was a graying war dog, snapping at ventures he didn't have the schooling for. Kurge did appreciate the business of the pit, and the irony of how some matches played out. The arena was far superior to the theatre. Here, the players were real, and their characters shone true until weal or bloody woe.
"What are you grinning about, lout?"
Nexus snapped at him,
Perhaps one of your investments will be struck down later this day. No offence meant, Kurge rumbled, though his smile lingered. I was just appreciating your oaths. My oaths.
Nexus's nostrils flared.
What damned gurry is that, my oaths? Be professional, you one-armed git. You don't see the nobles laughing at their companions' losses, do you? No need for insults,
Kurge replied. Apologies if I offended you.
Your apologies now, from smiles to fake condolences. I share this box with a one-handed weasel, it seems, as two-faced as this one.
At the slight, Gastillo's golden mask turned, ever so slightly. A furious Nexus rose and threw his goblet at a servant.
I'm going to see what happened out there. Satan's balls! I'll get an answer, and I'll make certain this doesn't happen again.
With that, he stormed out the exit. The two remaining owners sat for a moment, waiting to see if Nexus would return. He did not. Gastillo shifted, regarded the closed door behind him, and faced the arena sands.
The dog, Blossom, tore out of here like his ass was on fire.
Kurge snorted in amusement.
You'd think this was the first time he had lost a fighter to one of those rabble.
Not first-hand, and that one wasn't rabble.
Gastillo said in a low voice,
There's skill there, as distasteful as it might be. The games are attracting more and more skilled free-trained every season. Individual swordsmen without the backing of a formal house or school or what have you. Eventually, you'll see one of them as champion.
Kurge arched an eyebrow.
Are you favoring them, Gastillo?
Favoring? No. Wary of them, yes. Mark my words. There's a gemstone in every mountain. It's just a matter of it clawing its way to the surface.
Rabble, the lot.
Rabble they might be, but that's not to say they're slouches.
Gastillo rubbed at his throat.
To think that would be a grave mistake.
Kurge scrunched his face and looked into the arena.
Enough of that shite, then. When's the next fight? A man has other things to do during daylight.
How many do you have fighting this day?
None. Summerhead will fight perhaps tomorrow. And you?
Tomorrow, as well. I have one in there.
I wonder how many Nexus has.
Kurge thought aloud.
If any more get killed outright, the man might choke on his wine.
He just might.
The pair became silent as the orator straightened in his podium and announced the next match. The warriors to fight were both free-trained, and the news was met with a raucous mix of cheers and boos. The two warriors emerged from their opposite entrances and walked on the sand. A frowning Kurge lifted one ass cheek from his chair and rubbed his face, preparing himself for the show to come. And as expected, the two pit fighters went at each other's throats like mad dogs. Sand and blood flew, and it took only a few moments before the dust clouds cleared, and one man remained on his feet. The other warrior squirmed on the sands, clutching his thigh, cut to the bone. Blood spurted between his fingers. The crowd roared, loving the violence. Kurge suspected they cheered for the quickness of the match. Robbed of mobility, the fallen gladiator held up a bare palm. The other accepted the surrender, and the fight was done. Kurge scratched an ear.
That was absolute shite. You see why they'll never advance much farther than a third round.
Perhaps not of those two,
Gastillo grated, but there are hundreds of them.
The season's a long one. A handful will show promise.
The lot of them are pure shite, Kurge grumped. If you found one shiny rock amongst the works, you'd still have to sweat to teach it anything. Not worth the effort.
So you say.
Kurge chuckled and eyed Gastillo with scorn. How long did you fight in the pit? One season? Two? I can't remember.
I was born into that hell, and I've a good enough eye to measure what is and what isn't shite.
Even the crowd knows Gastillo, and they're drunk most of the time. Kurge got to his feet.
All this talk about what is and isn't shite makes a man want to piss. You watch on there, boy,
and perhaps you'll learn something. Don't get too close, though. Shite flies. Might hit that pretty mask of yours. Then where will you be, huh? The gold mask didn't move, didn't offer a reply. Chuckling, Courage left. He walked past the manservant attending to them and, upon opening the door, met Nexus. With a flourish, the larger man stepped back and bade Nexus enter. The merchant glared and did so. Courage exited a heartbeat later. Ignorant punts. Nexus sat down next to Gastillo. The air so much fresher with a dog blossom gone.
It is that, replied the half-faced man. You returned quickly.
Too many people in the passageways. Nexus settled into his seat and took a goblet from a servant without thanks. Clattered shoulder to shoulder angered me even more. I'll talk to my taskmaster when I see him, and I'll have a necklace of balls if it happens again. A necklace of balls, Gastillo thought. That was an image that would strike fear into anyone.
What are you going to talk about?
Nexus's goblet paused a hand's breadth from his mouth, and he fixed Gastillo with a disgusted look.
You think I'm about to tell you? Take your best guess, you gold-plated topper.
The day I tell you anything is the day I'm permitted to pack the asses off the king's daughters. Nexus drank deeply, then demanded more. Keeping his insult in check, Gastillo sipped his own wine carefully between his metal lips.
A necklace of balls, indeed,
he fumed. He decided he would not inquire about vineyards and winemaking this afternoon, and reflected once again. These assigned seats of honor would be much better if it were only him. He thought about wandering down to the lower levels, where each house had a private chamber looking out onto the arena, where the sands were level with a man's upper chest. But those rooms were crowded with the training staff and house gladiators waiting for their time in Sunja's pit, and he reluctantly admitted that the box offered the best view to the games. Courage took his time at the latrines and, when finished, took a detour to the Gate of the Sun. He pushed through folk, leaving a wake of mutters and angry glares. No one challenged him. The owner walked by assembled scars, their visors impassive. Up ahead, the wide corridor ended in a glow of sunshine. Courage stopped, ignored the crowds milling about him, and placed his broad back to one of the arena walls. There, he waited. People walked by without a word. But some recognized the old bear. Those kept their distance all the more. All but one, a man with youthful features, slipped out of the stream of people. Dressed plainly in a black tunic, breeches and soft boots, the individual placed a shoulder to the wall and nodded to his employer. Dark Courage eyed the crowds as he half turned to speak.
Don't make me wait again, Bazanj, or I'll paddle your balls with a mace.
Apologies. My lord,
the smaller man said,
I want you to look into this one called Vadrian. See what he's about. Get Omaz to talk with him, but don't reveal anything just yet. And I want you to mind who this son of Sedan fights in the future. I'll give you further instructions thereafter.
Understood,
Bazanj said sleepily. Courage knew his agent was in his late 30s, but his damn near unwrinkled skin gave him the glow of a newborn babe.
How can you wear black in this heat?
Bazanj shrugged.
It's only hot if I stay in the sun, and I do not.
No, Courage thought, you're a creature of the shadows, where you do your best work. Get going,
the bald owner growled, and shoved the smaller man away with a curse, just to make it look convincing. When his agent had gone, Courage decided to return to the owner's box, mulling over Vadrian and the potential there. He liked what he saw in the young warrior. He liked the praying before the match. There were enough atheists around to despise such a show, and Courage could see a very lucrative opportunity in side wages, if he was attentive enough and manipulated the odds in his favor. That particular thought made Courage smile tightly as he made his way back to the games. Chapter 4. Harm and Muluk. The altercation with Vadrian had been interesting for only a moment before the masses went back to their own personal business. Perched at his desk above a fence of watchful scars, the Medea sat and pondered the next match. He frowned and sized up the great matchboard. He took another glance before getting to his feet. Gathered not far away from the arena official, Pignut and Harm leaned against a stone wall draped by shadows. They were a pair of big men amongst other physically intimidating gladiators moving throughout the underground chamber.
"You unfit bastard," Pignut scolded with a smile. "You had to go pick a fight with the noisiest punts in the pack."
"Puh!" Harm bared bad teeth. "I could only put up without yelling for so long. He's no church, man. This church of Sidon is a jest. Think about it. What church trains and sends a man to fight in these games, eh? No. When I can, I'll toss that sack of gurry into the streets." The Medea suddenly yelled, his voice carrying in those subterranean halls. "The next pairing will be Harm of Jiberia and Muluk of Cree. Prepare yourselves." Harm gave Pignut a questioning look.
"So soon," Pignut said, his eyes bright. "Interesting times."
Harm scowled at him.
"It's nice to know he remembers you."
Harm continued scowling.
"Need any help with your gear?" "The day I need help from you is the day I perish, Sanjan,"
the fat man shot back.
"So you need help?"
"Aye, that." Harm bent over and plucked at a huge sack at his feet, where he dumped his only tools of the trade. Unlike a good many individuals participating in the games, he actually owned weapons and armor. Some of the poorer free-trained did not, and they relied heavily on what the pit's armory had in stock, a selection of weapons and armor taken from dead men. The Jiberian undid the sack's knot. The smell of foul leather, poorly kept, floured the air and soured the faces of both men.
"Did you empty the bull in that?"
Pignut asked.
"I don't think so. You should leave that open afterwards. Try it out." "Who is this Muluk, anyway?"
Harm asked, changing the subject. Pignut shook his head.
"I don't know. He obviously doesn't belong to a school or the like.
So we'll be two dogs fighting over scraps." Harm winked.
"But all what scraps?"
Pignot's dark eyes glittered.
"Here then, you."
Harm held out a long sleeve of leather padding tacked together with pointed studs. He slipped his sword arm into the sleeve while Pignut held it and lay